I'm Sarah Kendall, and I'm in the WGXC studio right now with Melissa Weidman. Melissa is a writer, a musician, and a consultant, and she's here today for a conversation with us about ageism, the last frontier of the isms. Melissa, I'm wondering, for someone who has never thought about cultural perceptions or discrimination around age, can you introduce us to the topic?
Well, thanks, Sarah, for having me today on WGXC. It is the kind of a topic that I think many of us don't really think about. I've heard it described as the force of gravity, like the force of gravity. It's all around us. It's the air we breathe. It's the water we swim in. But we don't really see it, just like we don't see gravity or feel gravity until we get outside it. And I had my eyes opened when I was sitting in a meeting with some colleagues, one of whom was in her 80s. And when we came out, there was another, actually her son was with us, and who's my age, and we were all talking, and she was very upset about some comments that were made in the meeting. And her son and I were kind of perplexed. What comments? We totally missed it. Now, we think of ourselves as pretty aware folks, fairly educated. We would notice comments that we would see as racist or sexist, but it totally went over our heads that somebody had made a joke about her and demeaned her because of her age in a subtle way, but it was very apparent to her. And when she told us about it, it was like blindfold being lifted from my eyes. And I suddenly went, wait a minute, what else am I not paying attention to? So the three of us had a very long conversation in where she described what it's like to be in her 80s and what she encounters every day in terms of people, because she's short and has a spinal issue and is bent over. And this is a woman with a great deal of education and experience, and she's treated like she's a child. And people call her cute and hi, honey. And so that was the beginning of the process. And I started to engage in that dialogue with other people and read a lot of books and start thinking and asking myself and others, how does this affect me?
What's so interesting about the story that you just told and something you said to me earlier was that what I've heard of the conversation around ageism really does center around discrimination and specifically around what kind of legal protections we need to protect against, like you said, employment and hiring. But what you're describing as being the sort of gravity is just the culture that we sit in.
Yeah, I think it's more the attitudes that we have towards aging in ourselves that is conditioned by our entire advertising culture and story culture. If you look at fairy tales, who are the old witches? And you know, what goes along with sense of having a wrinkled face or being stooped over? It's scary. It's negative. Everybody wants to have smooth skin and use anti-aging creams and look younger and feel younger. And even the organizations that cater to our elders are certainly, you know, that if you go to Council on Aging or senior centers today, it's all about young, healthy, aging, you know, do a lot of sports, do a lot, you know, be in shape. That it's bad to look or feel old. But that's not how it used to be. This has only been in the last 50, 75 years, as our advertising culture has progressed, we have tended to sell to younger people, and everything is around that. And when you start thinking about it and looking at it, imagine what that must feel like if you are older and you see everything that's supposed to be attractive is not what you look like. Now, we certainly have experienced a lot of work around that with feminism and around racism. But in terms of ageism, that's why I call it the last frontier. People are not having those conversations in general.
What do you think, what happened to our notion of respecting our elders? Or do you see that also in our culture, or where does that live?
I think there's a bunch of different factors around that. Some is this advertising culture that has taken over and supplanted our sense of who we want to create our meaning with. And also the fact that we don't have the types of communities we used to have where people of many generations live over years. There's so much moving around, and people don't live with their elders. They don't know elders. They're segregated from elders. Mm-hmm. Elders now move away and are in elder housing, and they're not around teenagers or young people. So they don't understand each other. It used to be they lived in the same household or in the same tribe or the same village and had an opportunity to learn and grow from their elders. And it doesn't happen as much. Maybe that will change, I hope. But the other factor, I think, also that makes this important to be thinking about is the fact that the baby boomer generation, which is the largest segment of our population, is growing older themselves. Mm-hmm. And they especially were the first to really be victim, if you may, to this whole image of being younger and fitter and more using all these products that make them look that way. And I think they're going to have I am one of them, have a real crisis of identity as we are becoming older ourselves. And I'd like to tell you just a personal story in that I'm turning 60. And when I tell people that, the reaction I tend to get is, oh, really? You don't look 60 at all. And since I've been doing this reading and thinking, at first my response is, oh, thank you. I really get flattered. But now my response is, well, this is what 60 looks like. Mm. We all know many people who look great at 60. And what does 60 mean? Why is that different in your mind? Does that become older? I feel I'm at this threshold in my own mind. Sometimes it freaks me out. But on the other hand, everything's relative. I would ask people to think about who they know in their own lives, who they admire, who have been examples of elders that don't fit into what is the typical cliche of an elder. Mm-hmm. For me, I have my Uncle Morris, who died at the age of 99 and was a yoga teacher and did yoga every day right up until almost the last year. Stood on his head all the time. And he was an amazing person. But anybody could do that who wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. That he just put his energy into that. Being 99 didn't mean you can't do that. But we have these cliches. And you and I were talking, Sarah, about if anybody goes into the grocery store or the any place where they're selling birthday cards, you can just take a look at which one of these is your favorite. You can...
I know. Sure. It's amazing. You brought in these cards to look at, and they just look so, they're so unsurprising. These are just things you see. These are how birthday cards are written. Here, I'll choose one for you.
If this was TV, we could show it, but on radio, we'll describe it.
I want you to describe this one.
Ah, this is one of my favorites. It's a close-up of a couple of prairie dogs, I think they are. Gophers, prairie dogs. And it's a fisheye view of a couple of them standing up with their noses in the air, sniffing at you, the viewer. And you open it up and it says, "Do I smell old people?" It's just when you have this lens on, yes, it's funny. Of course, it's meant to be funny. But if you were to substitute the words black people or fat people or women or Native American or anything else, this could not be printed or sold. And there's endless mm-hmm. ones. This is just a sampling. Do you want to read one of them?
Yeah, I was looking at this one, which says, "Another year older. Well, it's good to know that you still got your," and you open the card, and the following words are crossed out: "Eyesight, looks, teeth, hair, money, health, charm." And the only remaining thing is you still got your birthday card. Happy birthday. And what's interesting to me about this one is that there are, I mean, eyesight, hair, and it becomes such a fine line, and then you're talking about someone's charm, someone's like their person. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, I actually find some of these kind of funny when you showed them to me. And I do think there's a real slippery slope between when you are finding, you know, joy and humor out of the natural process of the biological process of what happens to our bodies and our minds as we age. And then when we are really, like you said, kind of infantilizing some of our moms and our dads and our teachers.
So if you add the effect of that to when someone, say, in their 80s or 90s, walks into a hospital emergency room and the people who are serving them say, "Oh, hi, honey, how are you today?" And they cock their head sideways and they say, "So, sweetie, why don't you lie down?" How does that make that person feel? Calls them by their first name. These are people that grew up that you were called, they called their elders Mr. or Mrs. I had an elder tell me a story where she was going to have a catheter put in, and the nurse literally said to her, "Now, you know, dear, there is more than one hole down there."
Oh my goodness.
And the elder said to me, this woman said, "What kind of an idiot did she think I was?" Mm. So it translates into they don't get heard. People who are caring for them will often discount their perspective and say, "Oh, well, you know, it's one of those old folks. They don't know what they're talking about, or they're all, you know, a little forgetful." So then what costs us money is, as a country, is because they don't get acknowledged and heard, and this is just one factor, obviously there's lots of others, but it is a factor, that then they may have to go to the emergency room unnecessarily. They may not have the kind of comfort and support that they need. So I think it's an awareness that would benefit everyone, but particularly our healthcare workers, to think about what are the ways in which they denigrate and discount the words of these folks, not because they're trying to discriminate. I think that's an important point, is that it's not about finding who's a victim and who's a perpetrator. It's about being aware of how we all do this and how it affects our own ideas about our own aging, so that we feel badly about ourselves, but also how we treat those that we may be needing to care for.
Yeah. I'm so curious, because you described earlier this conversation as being one that doesn't happen often. And as you move through the world with this, with your interest and talk to people about it, what has been the response from your peers, from your family? I mean, how do you think people engage in this conversation?
It's definitely an aha moment for everyone when you get them in the proper time where they're comfortable and not feeling like, you know, it's not an attack. It's not an accusation. It's just, let's think about this together mm-hmm. and how this may be true or not for each of us. Everyone has a story mm-hmm. of either how they may have treated someone and not realized it, or how they've been treated themselves. And I think simply doing an exercise like looking at the birthday cards mm-hmm. Makes it very easy for people to suddenly realize, oh, maybe that isn't as funny as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody would be put down by those statements. And is that really my intention? And why is it when someone says to me, oh, you don't look your age, I'm flattered. Why isn't we can't say to each other, oh, you really look your age. Isn't that great? What's wrong with looking your age?
Well, or, you know, we all spend so much time and money fighting nature, like mm-hmm. just fighting against this thing that I think it would be in our own, the interest of all of our own health and wellness to celebrate and embrace what we become.
Well, that's a perfect point in that it's a huge multi-billion dollar industry that has a stake in keeping us feeling mm. incomplete and upset with our aging. So why is it that the activist community, which is so smart and so engaged in so many worthwhile issues, why is it this dialogue is not happening there? I just leave that as a question.
Well, it is inspiring to hear you talk about it. I mentioned this to you earlier, but I spent New Year's Eve with a 94-year-old woman named Renata, who totally blew my mind. She was like, would not let the party end before midnight. She was drunk, and she got on her motorcycle, her Vespa, after the party and drove herself home drunk, which I'm not condoning. Nobody should really do that. But it did make me think about why was that so surprising to me, and why was it so inspiring to me also to see someone who had really held on to their passion and their joy.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more and more of that because people are living longer than ever, and they estimate that the number of Americans 65 and older is projected to double from 35 million to nearly 70 million by 2030. And, you know, I'm routinely seeing people in their, you know, 100, 103, 105, 107, which never happened when I was young. Mm-hmm. So are we going to see love stories in the movies that talk about how people this age can have relationships? You know, are we going to have role models that really celebrate and acknowledge the value and wisdom and experience of people who, after all, we're all the same inside? Everyone I've talked to who's older says, yes, my body's changed, but I'm the same person I ever was. And we're losing out on the value of those people in our culture if we're not giving them the honor, and if they need to have us slow down around them in order to hear them, slow down. You don't need to necessarily talk louder, but maybe more clearly. You may have to adjust your pace in order to match theirs and recognize how much vitality lives within what might look like it's not your speed.
Melissa, thank you so much for joining us. I wonder if someone's interested in this conversation, do you have any recommendations for them about where they might go to read up?
Well, there's a gentleman named Dr. Robert Butler who first coined the term ageism about 35 years ago, and his organization is the International Longevity Center, USA. And then there's also Erdman Palmore and Margaret Goulet, who has done a bunch of writing. But it is a little bit hard to find thing. There's not a lot out there. So there's a lot of room for this conversation to continue.
Melissa, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah.